From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
You're listening to Money Talk for February 7th, 2020. For a fun time, it's Garrison Keeler of Prairie Home Companion telling stories and singing songs at the Collectivo Back Room on Thursday. The Bucks are home Monday with Sacramento, and the Brewers pitchers and catchers report to Arizona this Thursday. A San Diego brewery is raising money for the people and animals of Australia affected by the fires. The campaign is called Buy a Beer, Save a Koala. How can you say no to that? Also in Australia, it's illegal to ride a horse and use a cell phone unless it's hands-free. You can probably get around that, though, if your horse is named Mr. Ed. Just in time for Valentine's Day, the El Paso Zoo brings back their Quit Bugging Me promotion. How it works is simple. You sponsor a cockroach. Have your ex's name written on that cockroach, then you watch on the internet as it gets fed to other zoo animals. Remember, this is a Valentine's Day promotion. Not surprisingly, most of the cockroach sponsors are women. I'm not sure, but this may be a genius way to sell pizza. An Ohio pizza joint slogan is getting all kinds of free media coverage and, of course, internet outrage. Their slogan is, come in and enjoy the pizza, because fat people are hard to kidnap. Ouch. Around the big table today, we have Brian Kilb, Art Rothschild, Mike Helzel, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks for that, Jason. Yeah, broad markets recaptured gains for the year with the S&P up 3.2% this week and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 3% this week. The Dow closing the day at 29,103. The NASDAQ, a little more tech-heavy index, up 4% this week and now up 6.1% for the year. While the S&P 500 now up 3.1% and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 2.1% for the year. And the yield on the 10-year Treasury moved a little bit higher this week after falling the past couple, closing the week at 1.58%. You know, I think maybe a good place to start this week, just a little bit of a refresh on where earnings have come from, where earnings are going, and then clearly I think plenty to dive into maybe, following that. But, you know, just for investors listening at home, as we kind of look at the earnings picture, and we had talked earlier in the year, and in particular earlier in the quarter, about how weak full year 2019 earnings were going to look, and how in particular, flirting with the idea of an earnings recession or this idea that we'd have two consecutive quarters of earnings decline. Looks like maybe we're going to avoid that, but still a little bit too early to say for sure what the fourth quarter looks like with only about two-thirds of stocks reporting so far. You've got data from Refinitiv saying that earnings should come in around 2-2.5% for the fourth quarter. And again, that puts full-year earnings pretty flat. But, I wonder, Art, Brian, Mike, any of you that wish to chime in, you know, what kind of we're looking at as far as earnings, what that might mean for, what investors are kind of seeing as far as stocks, but then more importantly, kind of the look ahead for the earnings picture.
Well, since I was mentioned first, I guess I got to talk. I think my understanding at this point is that the earnings are coming in higher than anticipated. About half the companies reporting or something like that are reporting higher earnings than anticipated. But again, we're talking last year. So they're finishing off the year. I think investors are looking forward to what, you know, is foreboded for the current year. And I think we're in a generally favorable trend because we expect corporate profits to be higher for the year. So as long as these earnings are coming in higher and as long as they're forecasting continuing growth of earnings for 2020, I think it's very positive, you know, for the markets.
And it's such a reasonable point. You look at 2020 forecasts, as you say, looking at close to 9% for 2020 earnings, come down pretty significantly from what we thought even a month ago, but still a pretty reasonable number. And then you look at 2021 and still talking about maybe 11% earnings growth there. So plenty to look forward to. And I think the challenge there is just where valuations are right now. You look at a forward PE of around 19 for the S&P 500. You look at a trailing PE, you know, well above 20 now. That's maybe a little bit of cause for concern, and certainly I think something that as a table we can come back to. But the other piece I think that's been interesting to watch is as we get through earnings season, we tend to see bigger price movements on individual stocks. And so we saw, you know, a company like Tesla this week down 17% in a day. You see you know, any number of those kind of high flyers that so many people look at and go, yeah, I wish I had that as part of my portfolio, that all of a sudden are down, you know, 5-10% just from one trading session. And, you know, Brian, I know you've had this conversation. I know you and I talked about it earlier, but what do you tell clients when they've got that one particular stock that they have their eye on? You know, they've seen it go up and up, and they've got this fear that if they don't pounce on it, they're going to miss out. But then more importantly, you get a day like we saw for Tesla, and, you know, is that an opportunity to buy in, or really how should we view that particular position?
You know, Kyle, let's tie both of these conversations together. You know, I think when you look ahead and you anticipate earnings growth this year of maybe 8 or 9%, and yeah, those might slide south a little bit depending on what happens, although we had good economic news this week that would provide some reassurance to that. We can talk about that in a minute. But or maybe we do what we've done in the past couple of years, which is maybe even beat those expectations a little bit. But if earnings are going to grow 8 or 9%, it's pretty hard to imagine the market reacting negatively, right? And you say, well, yeah, but these events happen from time to time. And my gosh, look at what's happening even in the last couple of months. A positive step forward with China. Now we have this coronavirus, election news, impeachment news. You know, none of these things have really rattled the markets significantly over a long period of time. So you kind of go, well, you know, it seems to me that if valuations are a little ahead of themselves and earnings are stable, it doesn't seem like there's a big topside for the market from here. And then you start to talk about stuff like Tesla, where you have some amazing volatility in that stock. And always kind of amazes me toward the end of the cycle when you start to see some more irrational behavior. I mean, they don't even make money and they're, what, twice as significantly bigger than Ford now, right? And I think the danger and the thing that is worrisome to me at this late stage is when people want to buy that one stock that's going to go through the roof and make them rich people, because it just doesn't happen that way. And you take a week like this and you take a stock like Tesla. I had several phone calls earlier in the week and I'm like, yeah, you could have bought that whenever, but you would have had to buy it at exactly the right time. You'd have to sell it at exactly the right time, and you'd have to pay something reasonable to make out in the long run. And who does those things? Well, of course, on Wednesday, the stock's down 17%. So I think you combine those two things, you want to have a good vision for the long run and the underlying fundamentals of the market. And you want to ignore some of this day-to-day stuff, and especially these high flyers that are built on nothing, you know, and that's what Tesla is right now.
Well, and I think worth pointing out that, you know, there's reasons why you might want to hold those stocks. There's reasons why, you know, you feel like you're missing out when you don't have them. But often if you're holding a diversified portfolio of mutual funds, you are participating in those stocks. And yeah, maybe you don't see it directly, but the underlying fund you're holding probably has much or at least a little bit of whatever those stocks are you're looking at. And so I think it isn't necessarily all or nothing. And then to the extent that, you know, you want to go out and buy that directly, I think the important thing to remember is to keep your exposure limited there if that's absolutely something you feel like you have to do. Yeah, maybe it's not the way we'd do things. We'd prefer you take a little more diversified approach. But keep in mind that there's a lot more risk in buying that one individual company.
You know, Kyle, I think I don't have a problem with buying Tesla or some of the other high flyers. I just recognize what they are, you know, and as you say, make them an appropriate amount of your portfolio. Buying a stock that doesn't make money and hoping that it quadruples in some short period of time is not a retirement strategy. That's a speculative investment. There's no problem with having a few speculative investments in your portfolio that aren't going to damage your long-term strategy. But if your idea is to, you know, take it easy and stay home every day and hope you buy the right stock, it's just not a way to retire.
Yeah, the real question is, how do you accumulate wealth over long periods of time? And what we found on a long-term basis is by adding consistently to what we use, which are managed portfolios. So we're constantly working at adding a little here, subtracting a little there. And as you suggested, you'll have everything there. You know, Apple, the one that got away. You own Apple already. Microsoft, the one that got away, you own it. Tesla, if it's an appropriate stock, you have it, as you suggested, in your portfolio. So as you guys suggest, you have to avoid the temptation of buying something just because everybody has it or because it made money over the past year. I'm amazed at how many people, we're very familiar with the fact that the stock market went up 31% on average last year. Our clients are up 16, 17, 18, 19, 20% on well-balanced portfolios. And that, if you can do that on a regular basis, you're going to make some money. And so we don't have to go speculating on a Tesla or anything else for that matter.
You know, and I think, Art, when you take a year where you made 20 or whatever you made, you had this incredibly strong year, and your portfolio, your risk is appropriate, you know, you want to keep what you made.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I think people forget that. And what oftentimes happens is people get so excited about making it, they want to make more and perhaps elevate their risk at a time when the dangers start to grow, with price, maybe valuations being a little stretched and whatnot. And heck, I want to make decent money, but I also want to keep what I have. And I think just making sure as we enter these later stages, perhaps, of the cycle, that you pay attention to risk, because it's what matters in the long run.
Well, I think historically, a lot of what we're talking about right now has really come down to a lot of these technology companies, right? They're the ones that have been the high flyers, the ones that so many people wish, oh, if I had just gotten this before everybody knew about it, look how rich I'd be. And I think what we found out in the tech bubble and what we're likely to find out again is that, A, some of these probably aren't even technology companies. Some of these are companies that just happen to have a website that sell, you know, on the internet. That doesn't make them a technology company. And B, that at some point in time, they've got to make money. And, you know, we've learned before that if you don't have a model to actually make money, that's not a great prospect for investors. And so I think as we kind of look at what's the story for some of these companies, it's, yeah, okay, in the right proportions, as we talk about, if you're properly balanced, as we talk about, there can be a place. But, you know, I think absolutely, you know, there's a limit to how much enthusiasm we should have for some of these. And then the flip side of that is you look at historically what's kind of been the backbone of our economy, and maybe less now than it was in the past, but manufacturing. And Joel, we got some data on manufacturing this week that maybe paints a picture a little rosier than what we've seen kind of the last half year.
Yeah, Kyle, we've actually been having a manufacturing recession. And keep in mind that manufacturing is the one part of our economy that really reflects the global economy, and it really, you know, is susceptible to what's going on around the world. So we got numbers on Monday from the Institute for Supply Management that for the first time in 6 months showed that manufacturing as a sector was expanding, that it was growing for the first time in all that time. And again, we always remind everyone that, you know, 1 month does not a trend make, but that's a good sign. We also had numbers on Tuesday from the Commerce Department on factory goods orders, and that's another kind of a harder look at what manufacturing is doing, and that was for the month of December, and that looked pretty good too. That was up for the second time in 3 months, but a lot of that was because of defense spending. So there were a lot of planes and such that the Pentagon was ordering, and so that kind of built that up. But all in all, I mean, it's and again, it's early. You know, I think there have been some signs that maybe the global slowdown, you know, might be starting to speed up again. But you know, you throw in the coronavirus, you throw in you know, Boeing grounding its troubled aircraft, and you know, that could make a difference on some of those manufacturing numbers.
And some changes in the employment picture as well, Joel. The unemployment rate ticked up a little bit, but really the news may have been good news, even though that rate moved higher.
Right, yeah. So the reason that the unemployment rate went from 3.5%, which was a 50-year low, to 3.6%, which is what it was for January, is that something like 183,000 more Americans entered the workforce. These were people who weren't prior looking for jobs. So that's when unemployment going higher is a good thing, because they actually added to the labor force. It's also telling us, so we added 225,000 jobs last month, which is a lot, especially considering that we've been doing that for 112 months in a row of adding jobs. So those 183,000 more people looking for work is encouraging, because it tells us that we still have some supply of labor out there, that we haven't reached the end of that yet.
And Joel, labor supply was a real concern. You look at what a lot of the institute surveys have said, that You know, labor is the critical issue for business right now, that they just can't find the workers they need. And so when you look at a labor force participation rate that's the highest it's been since 2013, you look at kind of the direction that the economy's heading and maybe putting some more of those people back to work as we kind of move down the road here, that just speaks to, I think, more potential consumers. It's more money in people's pockets that should be able to be spent. And so, you know, if the concern was that the global slowdown would impact the U.S., would impact U.S. consumption, I think the hope as you look at all those numbers is maybe that's a little bit more of a tailwind to economic growth, at least here in the U.S. And so, you know, encouraged by some of the employment data, I think encouraged by what we're seeing now on the manufacturing front. Obviously, a lot of noise in that data, obviously a lot of reasons maybe to think that it's a little too early there, but certainly some positive signs. You know, I think the big piece of news that's been out there now for about a month is 2019 novel coronavirus, you know, and clearly a lot of potential impact, even starting to see some signs. You know, Mike, you and I talked earlier about the impact on the oil market in particular as just one example. Wonder if you could share some of your thoughts there.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, outside of the human toll that the coronavirus is taking, one of the sectors that's getting hit pretty significantly is oil, obviously, because China is kind of the global epicenter for demand growth. And you're just seeing steep declines in oil price. I mean, we have the stats here that it's down 17.3% year to date. And like, I think some people that, you know, when you look online, one of the things people are looking for is that OPEC and Russia to come together, make a deal to kind of stop the decline. That hasn't happened yet. You know, they're looking to cut hundreds of thousands of barrels per day. Russia wants to do more than that. You don't know. Russia, obviously, we all know, works on its own timeline. So they're hoping to have a deal next week, but who knows? But then when you kind of move that, you know, forward a little bit of the pressure, it could it's kind of forcing on airline stocks and other travel stocks. I mean, you look at Delta, American, British Airways, they've all suspended flights to China already. And that's a huge piece of their revenue. And then when you just also think of the amount of fuel and oil that it takes to fire those planes up, you don't have to be really good with numbers to know that's a lot of fuel that's not getting used. And that unless a solution is created, that's just going to continue to sit there and continue to drive prices down. So I'm hoping to see a solution with that soon. But again, with the two players being major players being OPEC and Russia, I think you just kind of have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm not sure we fully appreciate how quickly we're moving away from fossil fuels, too, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Some of us older guys, we're just so used to talking about oil all the time, you know? And I think you think about kind of the ruckus in the Middle East a month ago or so, whenever that was. It's funny how time passes. But it had such a nominal impact on the markets relative to what I would have expected, you know, even 10 years ago. And I think some of that obviously correlates to our you know, the fracking here and our dependence on oil. So it's somewhat localized to the U.S. But even globally, I think there's probably a pretty quicker trend, hopefully environmentally, to move beyond fossil fuels. And it just seems to me like that's going to be a lid on oil prices, a growing pressure on oil price tops for the future.
I do think it's worth spending a couple more minutes on this virus thing. Kyle wrote a great article that was in our newsletter and is on our website. Dealing with headlines is only part of the stock market story, so I'd suggest that our listeners read that one. He does a great job of talking about how this is just something that these things come and go on a regular basis. But it's also thinking about this virus, we really don't know yet. It's creating uncertainty, and the market hates uncertainty. So the worse the news gets, I think the worse the markets could do over the short run. Over the long haul, just like with a hurricane or other natural disaster, there's going to be rebuilding. And so pent-up demand will replace, you know, the lack of spending, you know, during the crisis. Normalization that comes thereafter will, again, improve earnings. And then, again, as I said, rebuilding, you know, whatever infrastructure has to be rebuilt from, you know, whatever the toll of this disease is. But in the meantime, you just have to watch that. There will be headlines, and you have to appreciate the fact that we've always gotten through anything that's happened like this in the past. And you just have to have a well-diversified portfolio. Remember, you have balance, you have fixed income that you can draw from in times of crisis. So just pay attention, but, you know, don't panic.
And I don't know if it's a coincidence that when something like this happens, I'm on the show, but maybe I'm just the one that has to tell everyone, don't trade the headline. Like, don't do it. I tell my clients all the time that, I mean, I've had meetings this week where they just want to talk about the coronavirus for the first 20 minutes, and I tell them, well, no, there's more to it. So, again, when you hear my name in the introduction, just know I'm going to say, don't trade the headline. And
hey, when Corona Beer has to issue a statement, because a large percentage of people think the virus is somehow related to their beer, that shows you the state of sometimes non-informed investors, right?
Well, Mike, I think your point is absolutely the right takeaway from this, in that, you know, by the time you're having those meetings with clients, a lot of the stocks and sectors that you'd trade away from if those were your concerns have already taken a hit. And so you look at the airline stocks or the travel stocks more broadly, they've already fallen 10, 12, 15%. I mean, it's no wonder they've fallen that much. You know, Chinese tourism here in the U.S. is a $30 billion industry. That's 0.15% of our annual GDP. You go the other way, and U.S. tourism in China is only about 4.4 billion. So it'd be far less of an impact on their economy if we couldn't get there, as we can't right now, than it is with them not being able to come here. And so, you know, yeah, there's real impact there. And certainly that's going to be felt, especially by those travel companies. But the reality is those stock prices probably reflect that pretty quickly. And so by the time you've had that thought, so have 1,000 other people, and they've taken action on it, maybe incorrectly, because longer term, that's an area that, you know, I think a lot of people see some pretty significant value in those travel stocks. And so, you know, I think that the right message right now is to fall back on that balance art, as you said, but then also remember, you know, maybe the news isn't the time to be selling things. You know, I think the one thing that might have been missed in all the volatility the past couple weeks, and again the rally this week that kind of recaptured this year's gains, was that the S&P 500 regained an all-time high on Thursday. And so, you know, always worth pointing out that comes at a time when valuations are extremely high. It comes at a time when, you know, maybe investors are looking at their portfolio and going, wow, look at how great this has been. And so, you know, Art, I wonder what you tell clients who are going, yeah, have things gotten too far? You know, has the stock market just run beyond where it ever should have been? And, you know, I think maybe some confirmation in the last 2 weeks that was possible. But then, and then here we are again at these new market highs.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is 10 years from now, you're going to look back at this as a buying opportunity. Over time, stocks make money. So even though stocks are overpriced at present, based on price earnings multiples, over time, if you're patient, you accumulate stocks to make money over long periods of time. I think you'll do well just continuing to do what you've done that makes you successful, which is, again, accumulating an appropriate part of your portfolio in the stock market and just not all of it.
Yeah, Art, I'm totally on board with you. I also think, though, if you take it another layer deeper, because that's what we're supposed to do, right? We get paid to do this. But that I like to buy cheap stuff, you know, and it doesn't matter whether I'm at the grocery store or shopping for clothes, which I never do, by the way. but it doesn't matter. I mean, I want to get a deal, you know, and I do think you take a lot of the downside out when you buy something cheap, you know, and to your point, Art, I don't think you can always do that, you know, but I think when you have the discretion in your portfolio to add and remove risk appropriately, it is hard for me to do a lot of buying right now. And I think I'm going to be patient and look for opportunities along the way. But certainly I'm also not fearsome or worrisome about where stock prices are just yet, because there is a lot of strong underlying data. So, you know, somewhere in the middle, I think, is kind of how I feel, and we'll see how the year plays out, you know.
Well, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.